Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Kurt, we have big news in New York. Not Kevin Durant, RJ Barrett, and the New York Knicks reach a rookie extension, 4 years, worth up to $120 million. Now, this is the big thing that jumps out to me. The last draft pick to sign a multi-year contract extension with the New York Knicks was back in 1999 with Charlie Ward. And that's when the Knicks were good. So let's just start it off there. How do you feel about this? Are you excited about the move that New York just made?
By the way, I love that Leon Rose, for whatever you think of what he's doing, has done some things right. Like, I'm not giving up my draft picks. I'm not, or not easily. Like, I'm hoarding them, and then I'm doing smart things with them. Like, he's been patient, and now actually re-signing one of your good young players rather than trading him for some aging vet. Like, it steps in the right direction as an organization. I like this deal. By the way, it's $120 million is the number that got thrown out by the agent first. It's $107 million guaranteed with about $13 million in incentives if he makes all-star teams or all NBA teams and stuff like that. So, that's a good incentive for – I like that for the Knicks end because Barrett's the kind of guy who could get there, right? Like, he could be an all-star, and this is – hey, putting that financial motivation out there is a good thing. I like the deal. I really like that he tried to put an artificial deadline in the talks about Donovan Mitchell, right? Like, hey, you got to do it by Monday or we're just going to sign Barrett. Like, you got to, like, yeah, here's your artificial deadline. You going to do this? No. All right. No, I'm serious. I'm going to re-sign RJ Barrett because we like him. So they keep him at a number that's, and look, it looks like a lot of money because it is a lot of money, but with the salary cap going up, I don't think it's an unreasonable number for betting on what RJ Barrett can be in a few years. He has the most important skill in the NBA. He can create his own shot. Would you like him to be a little more efficient with that shot? Yeah. Would you like him to be a little better at setting up teammates? Yeah. But he's 22 and he can create his own shot. That is the most valuable thing in the NBA right now. So, I mean, I thought it was a pretty fair deal. Did you, I mean, you're in New York. How's everyone reacting?
I'm in Queens, so it's kind of like, are you a Knicks fan or are you a Nets fan? But either way, I think most people are kind of taking a sigh of relief. But as far as New York fans with this deal, look, I know it's not necessarily the most glamorous thing, which always upsets New York fans. You know, I've noticed that. It's like they almost treat their teams like a stock exchange. You know, I love this guy for 2 weeks, and then there's a dip. Oh, trade him. But anyways, I think with RJ Barrett, the numbers you mentioned, $107 million guaranteed, just to put that in perspective, yes, it's a lot of money, but they just signed Jalen Brunson, who had one really good year in Dallas playing alongside Luka Doncic, for $104 million. Yeah. So, I mean, when you think about what this means, we always talk about, you know, the rookie max extension, DeAndre Ayton, you know, he didn't get his. Yeah. Well, you look at that 2019 class, the numbers that are being thrown out for rookie max deals, 5 years, $198 million, you know, up to $230 million. So when you think about this deal that New York made, that they're keeping a player who has shown flashes of being very good, but still, in my opinion, the decision-making, the maturity is not there yet. And he's 22 years old. I mean, what do you expect? But for them to be that conservative, to get the deal done and somehow build a young core and keep their two superstars, and I put quotes there because they haven't reached that echelon yet, but they are the franchise players for New York at this moment. And that's the key point, right? Like, at this moment, Julius Randle is on the same deal essentially as RJ Barrett. It's a 4-year deal worth $117 million or so. So you're thinking, wow, how did they get three franchise-ish kind of guys, two, and then plus the Jalen Brunson, who is kind of replacing Kemba Walker, you know, in that role,
yeah,
all for $120 million or less. Like that to me is case study. Other teams in the league need to figure that out as far as building a young core, because the other team that I think is in a similar position as the New York Knicks would be something like the Oklahoma City Thunder. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is not on that deal. Like, you know, Josh Giddey and like Chet Holmgren, I think they're playing a different game. So I think this is a really cool thing for New York. They're actually making conservative, wise moves in what I call boring revolution. But it works in this city at this moment.
I think it works. I think, look, the Knicks are going to be with – now you're betting on, if you're a Knicks fan, like you need a bounce back year from Julius Randle. Like if they shop around, they can't trade him for value. He has got to bounce back this year for them to really take a step. But RJ Barrett takes a step forward. Brunson gives you a secondary shot creator. You've still got Mitchell Robinson. You've still got some other players, you know, some young players you can play around with. We'll see what this ends up looking like. But it's a pretty good team that's set itself up. Look, the advantage to being New York is it's the advantage Miami has. It's the advantage the Los Angeles teams have. You can still go get a superstar. Like, superstars will want to come to you, I think. And I think that you just have to create a foundation they want to play with. This Knicks team might be a true number one away, but now you kind of got a situation where that guy could come in and thrive. So I'm bullied. I'm strong on bully. Suddenly I sound like Teddy Roosevelt. Bully for them. I don't know where that came from. But I'm bullish on what they're doing. I do think that, like, they are headed in the right direction.
Yeah, the tree in New York was rot at the core, you know, and I feel like this is one of those things where they're trying to build up. And like I said, very conservative. It's almost like angel investing, you know, and this is angel investing in the NBA. Once again, we're talking at a difference of $100 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a lot of money in any you know, arena, but especially in the NBA, to get your core that you believe in for a total of $300 million when people are signing rookie max extensions for $230 million.
Yeah.
One player. To me, that is the definition of angel investing. We'll see where it goes. Can Jalen Brunson continue the momentum? You know, can he continue to break out and do what he did in Dallas consistently? We'll see. Maybe he can become like a Jalen Brown. If that is the case, then wonderful. Maybe RJ Barrett can become a franchise player like Jason Tatum. Maybe. Who knows? He's so young. He's 22. And maybe Julius Randle will continue to improve. We saw him steadily get better, and he was making strides in his career. As you mentioned, last year was a dip. So, how will he respond? But for that bet, three players, $300 million, to me, that is like, that's the angel investing sauce that is so cool that we're seeing. You just don't see that in New York because, you know, historically, the past 20 years since Charlie Ward in 1999, the New York Knicks have been playing that game of let's go get that superstar who could save us. And to me, that quest for immortality is a lot like Excalibur with King Arthur, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's this idea, Kurt, where it's like, if I could be the one to pull Excalibur out, so then how many have tried? How many have failed? It's like, leave that alone. Like, please, you don't need to try that again. It's too expensive an experiment. And the myth is a myth for a reason.
Yeah. I also think that what's been great about New York is they've gotten away from some of the bad habits, and like not re-signing anybody, you know, number one draft pick or first round draft pick since Ward. But there's always been this sense of you can't rebuild in New York. You've got to do it now. You've got to do it fast. We have to be big. We have to be stars. Jeannie Buss kind of talked about that with the Lakers this week, and it made me concerned in the long term, because when you start doing that, when you start thinking short term, you eventually kind of cut yourself off. And the thing is, Knicks fans are smart. Like, if you're – I don't want to say tearing it down and doing the process rebuild, but if you take a step back and say, hey – this is where we're at. This is what we need to do. And you're just upfront with, we're going to make smart draft picks. We're going to develop these guys. We're going to keep them and build a core. The fans will buy into the hope, right? Like, I think the fans are smart enough to know that you don't have to just, hey man, we better go get another star. We better bring in star X at the cost of whatever. It's not how you can build something sustainable.
Yeah, and I think the point here is that as far as managing expectations, to me, this team could be on a very good year, 6th to 8th in the conference.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like we're talking about like sneaking into the playoffs here and you know, playing a nice first round, and then let's, you know, get some playoff games back in Madison Square Garden and move forward. But I think that that type of, you know, year one to year three to year five, like that kind of trajectory is the trajectory that New York needs. It's kind of like you go to the doctor, like, you know, it's like, okay, we need to slow down. Like you said, we need to slow down. Let's take a step backwards, assess the situation, and then recover. Because once that they get that core, I think the next thing would be, okay, well, let's think about the supporting cast. Do we believe in this, you know, this trio that we've assembled? If so, the rest of New York has always concerned me. You know, like guys four through, you know, the rest of the bench, like to me, that's always kind of been a little concerning. The recent draft picks as well, being able to realize that, hey, Kevin Knox didn't work out. Like, let's move on. Kimba Walker, we got him. Didn't work out. Let's move on. That ability to cut bait in New York, I think, is also a very promising sign, right? But once they establish the core, then they establish the bench, and then I think you're in a position like you're describing where this becomes a very tantalizing, you know, proposition to a player, whoever, you know, whoever your franchise pick is to be a number one superstar, if you can't grow and develop within the organization. Right. That is a compelling offer at that moment. Right now, it's a disaster. Why would you want to go to New York?
Yeah, I think that reputation is changing among players too, which is a good sign.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Now, we have to talk about Donovan Mitchell briefly. Because that rumor, it really kind of gained a lot of steam, and now it almost happened. Do you still think it could happen?
I do, actually. I think, look, this felt – the R.J. Barrett signing, like I said, was an artificial deadline the Knicks set up, and Leon Rose set up like, hey – and by the way, smart play if you're happy keeping Barrett, because the only way things get done, frankly, in life half the time, but certainly in NBA, is there's got to be a deadline. If you let guys kind of – think about it and I'll get around to it. Like they'll think about it and get around to it for like, it'll stay in that kind of wishy-washy area forever. So the artificial deadline, especially if you're willing to keep him, is a good sign. Now that Barrett's re-signed, everybody took a step back and paused. But at the end of the day, I don't think it really changes the dynamic. What I've been told, and I'm not alone like on this. I know Mark Berman from the New York Post has been front and center on this part. But what I heard from people was, yeah, they'd like Barrett. But what they care about are unprotected first round picks. At the end of the day, that's what matters most to the Utah Jazz. And nobody can really offer more of those than the Knicks. The Knicks just have the best pick package. And so it's just a question of what that ends up looking like. And if RJ Barrett's not in it, is someone else. And this is, by the way, like, you know, whether Quentin Grimes is in the deal or not. And Utah reportedly wants the Lakers in the deal because they have two. You know, 27 and 29, we're talking like 7 years out, but they have first round picks they can throw in this deal theoretically to get, you know, if they're willing to get rid of Russell Westbrook and bring back Bogdanovich and I don't know, maybe Cam Reddish or whatever, like whatever that combo ends up looking like. The idea is the Jazz want picks and they're going to look for ways to get that. And I don't think that changes. It doesn't, like, the thing is, Corey, who's the other team in the mix? Miami? Miami's offer is Miami's offer. Like they can throw in one or two picks, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson to match salaries. You know, they you can tweak around the edges, but the offer is the offer. The Knicks can just beat that if they want to.
The thing about this Donovan Mitchell trade to me, it just comes down to this idea of, well, what do you think he's worth?
Yeah.
And to me, that is a very opaque question, because if you would have asked me that question 2 years ago, I would have said he's worth an awful lot, because you're basically operating off this idea of potential, you know, coming out of the bubble, Kurt. I mean, the stars that we saw, Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell, right? Like that rivalry, I was excited for. And I thought, you know, remember that? I thought that was going to be electric. I thought this was going to be the thing for the next few years. I thought that was going to be a premonition. I haven't seen Jamal Murray play since. You know, and then Donovan Mitchell has taken a huge step back, in my personal opinion, because he had at one point the best team in the league. The Quinn Snyder's team was like the best team in the league from top to bottom, and they weren't able to do anything substantial with it. So I personally think that his value is not in a good place right now, especially with Rudy Gobert resetting the value within the whole market, which I think was they severely overpaid for Rudy Gobert. The Minnesota Timberwolves did. So when you think about this market that's basically priced out, like as far as just everything's overvalued, and then you have Donovan Mitchell who underperformed on his way to what was becoming one of the heir apparents of the whole league, I don't know if he's worth that deal in Miami. Or, you know, if you're the Knicks, like, are you really worth, like, what is he worth to you? And that becomes very tenuous, particularly in this rebuild situation where Utah is like, we want to move on. We're looking for picks. This, I think, puts him in a very interesting moment. Who's going to take him?
By the way, I think your point, what is he worth to you, is really at the heart of some of this. Because if you're Miami, you've got Tyler Hero. How much – not Donovan Mitchell is a better player than Tyler Hero, but one pick worth? Two pick, what's that value range? How much better is he? How much are you willing to give up? And how much future are you willing to risk to get that done? Is he really that much better than Tyler Hero that you're like, wow, I got to put two unprotected first round picks in this? I don't know that it's that big a leap. Where the Knicks trying to establish themselves, talking about that foundation they're trying to build, I feel like it's a slightly different calculus. Plus, they've got a lot more picks. Like they can afford to give them up and not damage and still have, you know, if they give up two first round picks, they've still got unprotected and five total. They've still got like four more first round picks they can trade to bring in other players and stuff. Like they leave themselves flexibility to do other things. So the situation's a little different. I will also say this just from the pure negotiating point of view. If you're the Knicks, I'm willing to wait this out a little bit because Danny Ainge has a new coach in Will Hardy coming in, and the youngest coach in the NBA, trying to establish a new culture in Utah. And if he's got to sit down the first day and answer at media day and answer 30 minutes of Donovan Mitchell, how are you going to use Donovan Mitchell? Is that trade – like if that's the conversation, because that will be the conversation every day until he's traded, it becomes a distraction that's hard to deal with. The Jazz don't want that, and the Knicks may be willing to say, hey, we can wait.
Yeah, and I think that's probably wise on there, because now what you're basically doing is, you know, putting the onus on them and saying, look, if you want to deal with all that, like we saw all the circuses that happened around the league recently with disgruntled superstars. If you want to deal with that, go ahead. In the middle of new ownership, new head coach, new vision, good luck with that, right? And I think you're right. I think it's a very astute point. And with the whole, like, you know, what is Donovan Mitchell worth to you question, I think clearly, you know, if you're talking about a Utah Jazz rebuild, that I didn't want to go into that. The New York City kind of rebuild that we are seeing is not obviously totally different places in the rebuild kind of idea, but I think you'd have to be a little cautious there. Ultimately, what we're seeing from Donovan Mitchell is there's a critical fork in the road, right? And, you know, I like him. I think he's like, I admire what he puts out there. I admire the way he carries himself. But ultimately, he has two different routes in front of him. He can either, you know, push through and become that franchise player, that all-star, that superstar that we saw flashes of back in the bubble, or he can become like a Victor Oladipo. And I think that right now, that is an interesting question. Like, what is Victor Oladipo worth to a team? Turns out he wasn't a franchise player like we thought he was. Turns out he wasn't even number two. Turns out like he's, you know, one of the third, fourth options on a Miami Heat team, right? And I think that's kind of like understanding that question of, well, what is he worth to you? And that's a really hard question to ask, because in Miami, Victor Oladipo's that. But in Indiana, he was another thing. But he was not successful in Indiana. So is he really worth that? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, Oladipo is one of the guys I'm kind of, by the way, quietly most interested to watch this year. He had the health issues. He never quite got right. He looked better in the playoffs for them with a full offseason of training, stepping into a role in Miami and not asked to be, you know, the man per se. You know, he gets to be Robin, to use John Wall's words. I think he could really have a bounce back year. Like, and they're going to need it in Miami after losing PJ Tucker and now losing Markieff Morris, you know, losing some forwards. They're going to need some guys to step up. And quietly, Victor Oladipo is an interesting guy to watch.
I want to bring your attention to Oklahoma City Thunder, one of the most exciting young players. Recently had a season-ending injury. Chet Holmgren is out for the season, out for the entire season with a Lisfranc injury in his right foot. So he sustained it playing in the Pro-Am game in Seattle. And this news is an interesting moment for Oklahoma City because they had, of course, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander becoming post-Chris Paul exit, becoming kind of the face of that organization. Josh Giddey, very exciting young player who perked up the ears of everyone, including yours. I remember we had some conversations about Giddey and how exciting he was to watch. And then you signed Chet Holmgren, who could be, on one hand, is he like a unicorn type? Is he Kevin Durant or is he Kristaps Porzingis? Is he something else? That was a pretty interesting question. No real clear blueprint to what he could do in the NBA. Now he's out. How does this affect Oklahoma City?
Well, I feel bad. Like, it sucks for Holmgren. It sucks for Oklahoma City fans. Like, nobody likes to see that year pushed back. The good news, or good news is the wrong words, the silver lining in this is that while he's got to have surgery and he's out, it's a ligament issue, not a bone issue. The bone fractures in the foot tend to be a longer term, tend to be the more chronic things. If the ligament can heal, especially at his age. So knock on wood, this isn't turning out to be something chronic. It kind of sucks to be set back, but I don't know that it really changes where they were because I think as an organization, they're just still in asset acquiring mode, right? Like they've got, I forget the exact number, but it's roughly 3,026 picks over the next 7 years or something. Like they've got a ridiculous number of picks coming in. They're not going to be good this year. And even if Holmgren were playing, they'd be interesting. I think they'd be worth watching, but I don't think they're going to be particularly good. They're going to be in the mix to add more next year. So I think they're still kind of in that mode. I don't know that it really changes too much. Hopefully, I don't know how you feel. I just hope for his sake he can get right and get back out there next year. And, maybe this ends up being the Blake Griffin kind of thing. We're sitting on the bench for a year. You get to absorb watching the game. You get to absorb the game a little bit rather than just getting thrown into it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely unfortunate. I think he landed in a good spot because Oklahoma City, I don't know how they do this, Kurt. It blows my mind. I don't know how Sam Presti has created this environment, but there's like no, it's like operating in a vacuum with no time. I have no idea how he does it. Like the fact that the fans, especially like post Kevin Durant, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, this patience that he has, got from the fan base, mind blowing. It's almost like because of all those picks you mentioned, people think there must be some sort of master plan. So they're willing to trust the process, something that we didn't see, in Philadelphia. And it's interesting because in Philadelphia, I think largely that was player driven, and it's like, can Embiid, it was driven by like Embiid. And then when it didn't work out, they fired the head coach. And now they're trying to pick the pieces around Embiid. And it's coming down to, okay, Embiid, did you lie to us? Whereas this time it came from Presti, the GM, the front office. And I think there's a shield there. And I think it's interesting too, because like since he is the face of the organization, but he's also shielded because he's not on the court all the time, that he's just created this environment where there's space and time for a guy like Chet Holmgren to recover, take as much time as he needs, which is, the only other place that I could think of, well, there might be a couple, but the one that comes to my mind is Golden State, James Wiseman, right? But the difference is that Golden State just won a championship and they have Steve Kerr and Steph Curry and everyone else. So that's the difference, but the same amount of time to heal and recover. So I think that in that sense, that's the silver lining for Chet Holmgren. And for the team, I think it's going to go back to that idea, what's Sam Presti's master plan? Because I think it's been kind of invincible. Like he's kind of been untouchable in that sense because it reeks brilliance. Like you have to have something. But I think this is going to be a test to that master plan to see if it is as invincible as we think it is. Because right now, I don't understand where this team is going. And I don't know the master plan, but it just doesn't, I don't, like, do you think Gilgeous-Alexander is the number one? Like, do you really think this is going to work? I don't know just how invincible this plan is. And I think that's the thing that's going to be tested. I'm not necessarily concerned about the performance of the young players. I think it's going to come down to Presti's vision.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I don't quite know what it's going to be. I'm not sure he knows, frankly. Like, he's got to get these guys out there and see who's going to be what, right? Like, and hey, how good is Holmgren? Gideon Holmgren showed some chemistry in summer league, but that's a glorified pickup game. Like, what's it look like in actual competition? And we're not going to find out for a year. So we'll see. I think you're right, though, that they've done a good job of taking pressure off those players and not, hey, you don't have to develop today. You've got time to develop down the road. So I think they've done a really good job with that. I think, by the way, you mentioned Golden State. That pressure thing starts to change this year for them, right? With the roster changes they've had, with, you know, Otto Porter gone, like guys just stepping out that played a role for them last year. Kuminga and Wiseman are being asked to step up now and not necessarily start, not necessarily play huge roles, but they've got to step in and play a role more consistently this year. And we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. I think Kuminga's up for the task. We'll see with Wiseman. But I think that they're a lot more is going to be asked of them in the regular season, at least. The no pressure situation is gone. This is a championship team, and they're going to be asked to play a role.
Yeah, I think absolutely, for sure. And then with Oklahoma City, the things that I'm looking for the season, because like you're right, this is, you basically can kind of like, you can just write it off, which is just a crazy concept, but it's true. I'm curious to see how Shai Gilgeous-Alexander continues to develop and mature. And then the other thing I think with Chet Holmgren is he's in an interesting position now, because there's like this weird tendency for people in basketball, well, people in sports, to basically associate you with something, right? It's like the word game. And right now the word is perhaps fragile, you know, like what is that concept is what's his durability? And that was already a question. Yes. And with his size being 7 foot under 200 pounds coming into the NBA, how would he last? And I think that this is going to be something that he now has to disprove moving forward. And that's something that's always going to come up every time he's on the court. And there's that weird kind of thing, just because the way that the stories are told, right? Not everyone's going to watch Oklahoma City every single game. So now it's like, okay, well, every time he's on camera, they're going to bring up the injury. They're going to bring up, that idea of durability. And that's going to be on him now to dispel that narrative. And the list of players that he's on, you know, as far as being a high draft pick that then sat out their first season, are players like Ben Simmons, players like Greg Oden, you know, like you mentioned, Blake Griffin. So when I look at that list, or players like from Denver, Michael Porter Jr., like talented players, but like Michael Porter Jr., we still haven't really seen him play yet. You know, like we saw him like glimpses of brilliance, but for we need to see him available, because he's a key component of that Denver team playing alongside an MVP candidate. So a perennial MVP candidate. And Jokic. So I think that's going to be the key thing for him to dispel that narrative and say, no, I'm not like those guys. You know, I'm available and ready. And that's going to be very difficult to do, quite frankly.
Yeah, I agree. No, it's going to be on him, and it's going to be on him starting next season to show he can handle the physicality and the durability. Like you said, it's a grind, man. It's the body was not meant to run up and down a hardwood court, you know, like that. That's not, it's hard on the body just playing basketball.
Next up, WNBA. We are in the thick of it. It's a new playoff format. You know, before it was single elimination, 1-1, then 5-5. And now it's best of three. And this is actually pretty interesting. Before we get into the games, Sky, Sun, and Aces, Storm. Kurt, this is like fascinating, because we know that the NBA always looks at the WNBA as far as like kind of testing new models, right? Like the whole concept of playing game, you know, single elimination, the concept of the Commissioner's Cup and in-season tournament, much like European soccer. And then this concept of, well, like, okay, what if they're seeding that is completely unrelated to conferences, but rather with highest winning percentage? Yeah. That is interesting, because then, you know, it brings their stars to your attention right at the beginning of the postseason, and it stays there. These are the best teams in the league playing against each other. Yeah. And that's exactly what they're doing. And we're seeing some great games. Like, you zoom into the two games in the semifinals, decided by one possession in the last 10 seconds of the game, both games. So, I mean, which game do you want to start with?
I will start with, let's start with the Storm, who I with a fantastic win. In a lot of talk about Suburban, Jewel Lloyd was fantastic and clutch in that game. She was it down the stretch, right? Like, she was so good in that game. And by the way, Corey, the other thing I'm loving now is that the two, I mean, I think these were the four best teams. I knew when we got to the second round, it was going to be relatively even, but the two underdogs in the Storm and why am I suddenly going blank on the other winner?
The Sky? Oh, it's the Storm. The Sun.
The Sun. Thank you. I don't know where that went. But the two quote-unquote underdogs winning puts a lot of pressure now. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how the two favorites, the two title favorites in Las Vegas and Chicago respond to getting kind of knocked out. But, hey, they're down 1-0, and they go into game two. They can't be down 2-0. Like, yeah, no. It puts a – I love best of fives. I know the NBA does best of seven because, you know, money, TV ratings. But I love the idea of best of five because just for that reason, you get an upset in game one and suddenly it's on. Like, it puts a lot of pressure on.
You look at the past series, you know, with the Chicago Sky playing the New York Liberty. Yeah, upset on the road.
Yep.
And then, well, how do you respond to that when the next game you could be sent home? And then they actually ended up routing almost, I think it was 38 points, the Liberty, and then coming back. So that's the one thing that this Chicago Sky team has just, they have resilience. Last year, the same thing. They were a 500 team that came in the playoffs and then won. And now they're looking to be the first back-to-back champion since the Sparks back in 2001-02. But back to the Storm and the Aces, one thing that you mentioned, Jewel Loy, 26 points, 4 rebounds, incredible performance. I absolutely love watching Sue Bird play because what she does so well, it's like you watch how many people run the floor and the outlet passing. I'm a nerd for outlet passing. Something like Sue Bird is always looking up. She's always glancing. And the amount of easy buckets for Breanna Stewart is just wild. I mean, if you're a big playing with Sue Bird, just as soon as the ball's up in the air and you see, you know, one of your teammates go get it, run the floor, and you're going to get 8 to 10 points just doing that.
There are guys, I mean, your pickup game at, you know, the gym at Notre Dame or at the YMCA, wherever you live, you play and you see the one guy who sets everybody up, the guy who really does find the passes, and everybody runs harder. Everybody's like, oh, that guy's good at passing. That guy sets people up. If I move, I will get rewarded, right? And so suddenly there's all this. You see it in the NBA with even with bigs like Jokic, right? Like everybody will move around Jokic because they know he'll find them, right? Sue Bird absolutely has that effect. That team plays hard around her in the half court and, like you said, running the floor and out and in transition because she's going to find them. She's going to reward them. And then that becomes its own thing on the team, right? Like suddenly everybody wants to move. Everybody's passing the ball. And you just get beautiful team basketball.
And I think you're on to something with this whole like underdog kind of concept of getting the jump on these two teams. You know, the Storm, it's funny because this team, like they've won so many championships. Like Duloy is the champion, Sue Bird is like the ultimate champion. And Breanna Stewart, I think only lost 5 games in college. She's like one of the best players ever to play basketball, you know. This team is this, it has a poise to this team that I think is so remarkable. That they're probably the most dangerous 4 seed ever, you know. But the Las Vegas Aces, one thing I think that I love watching about them is the way that Kelsey Plum has just taken a giant leap forward this year. We've seen flashes of that, you know, after a pretty rough start to her WNBA career with performance and injuries. But the way that she's responded since, you know, winning the gold in Tokyo, recovering from her massive injury in record time, winning gold, and then this year, putting together just an incredible season, quite frankly, and understanding that it's not about, you know, personal performance. You know, I was reading a piece about her recently, and she was saying that, you know, I'm over that point in my career where it's, you know, about my stats. I don't want to be a great stats stuffer. I want to win. Yeah. I want to be a great teammate. And you can see that, like, the way that the team trusts her. Like, she was the one who took that last shot with 4 seconds left in the game to give her that opportunity. The huge and one plays throughout the game as well, attacking the basket, being aggressive, but always looking to get teammates involved. I think that pairing of her and Becky Hammond is one of the greatest pairings. Just like I think, for instance, Luka Doncic and Jason Kidd, I thought that was an unbelievable pairing in the NBA. I think Becky Hammond and Kelsey Plum, unbelievable pairing. And Becky said, Coach Hammond said that Kelsey Plum's going to be better than she is. And she's a legend.
Yeah. I also think you're going to get Aja Wilson being – she's going to come out in game two and remind everyone why she's an MVP candidate, and she's going to be doing top. She is – they didn't – that was not the best Aces offensive game. They've been better about their defense, but they struggled a little to score in that one. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. That's a good defense they're going up against. Very good defense. But I think we'll see. This is the kind of spot where if you have that kind of talent from Wilson and Plum, and there's other guys, that's a deep team in Las Vegas. Somebody's got to step up. Somebody's got to break through and have the big day. And I think this is where if you're an MVP type candidate, this is your game. You've got to step up and show it. So I expect a big game two from her and a big rest of the series. But it's not going to be that easy. That is a tight series. And then on the other side, the sky, Candace Parker, 15-15. What? She has been so fantastic. By the way, one of the better defenders to this day in the league, and how she did not make the all-defensive team is kind of confusing to me. Like those, the all-defensive WNBA all-defensive team came out, and I don't – Candace Parker got left off somehow. I'm shafted. Looking for the right word there, but I don't know how you leave her off. And it's not that easy to take good defenders off. It's, trust me, putting together those lists is hard. It kills me every year in the NBA when I think lucky enough to have a vote, but it's difficult. But I don't know how you leave Candace Parker off. She's so good defensively.
Yeah, I mean, she had two blocks in the first quarter. Yeah. on round two, an unbelievable performance, 19 points, 18 rebounds, and also 5 assists. It's just crazy to see how she impacts every single part of the game. And some of those one-on-ones, it's just like,
yeah,
some of the moves that she would do, especially that fadeaway into the corner, I'm just like, wow. How do you guard her? It's like impossible. The one thing I think is really interesting about that Sky team is that Allie Quigley, only, I mean, she, by the way, I think is one of the pure shooters, you know, in basketball, period, yeah. Like full stop. And she only has 7 points. You know, Courtney Vandersloot, who is an unbelievable point guard, you know, often compared to be like the John Stockton of the WNBA, she didn't even score till the second half. So I think this was not a very good, despite, you know, Candace Parker's unbelievable performance that we mentioned, I don't think it was a very good showing by the Sky, which should concern you if you're the Sun.
Yeah.
Especially knowing that resilience. So I expect
both top seeds to bounce back with better games, but you're in it now, right? Like you're down 1-0. You're in it.
Next up, we saw that the NBA said that there'd be no games on Election Day. And we've seen how different players have been very vocal regarding various social justice issues, and particularly with voting, different voting initiatives. What do you think about this? It seems like a pretty... I don't want to say unprecedented, but a pretty amazing, you know, significant step for a league to just say, you know, go ahead, we're not going to do anything on Election Day and allow you to go vote.
I even if the gesture is largely symbolic, I think it's an important one to say, hey, you know, voting in this era in particular, Corey, I think voting and voting rights stuff matters, and the effort in some parts of the country to make it almost harder to vote is such the antithesis of what we should be striving for as a democracy. And it's not, look, you got to make sure that the vote is safe and all that, but I love the idea of it being a holiday. I like, there are countries that I know vote over the weekend or make it a holiday or have multiple days. Like, the easier you can make it to vote, the better. We should be encouraging more people to participate in democracy. And it just hasn't felt that way. So if it's nothing other than symbolic, I love that the NBA did this.
Yeah, I think there's always this idea of consistency, you know, as far as are you consistently doing these actions, especially with activism over a long period of time. And I think the NBA has consistently, you know, especially under Adam Silver's tenure, been very consistent in their actions. You know, and just most recently, you think about like the bubble, for instance. I remember when the Milwaukee Bucks decided they made their decision in the middle of the playoffs, you know, and how the league responded. So I do think that the NBA has been very consistent in that instance, which is quite frankly incredibly rare with the, especially the American sports leagues, the major American sports league. We just don't see that. We'll see blips, but then it goes back to, you know, some sort of, it reverts back to the mean. The NBA and the WNBA have never done that. They kind of change the status quo, which is really interesting. And I think the NBA also, one of the greatest assets about the league is that they understand that they're a star-driven league, and they understand that they, their players are their most important, you know, asset, just like any company understands that it's people is the most important thing about the company. And I think that the NBA, unlike other leagues, especially in the NFL, actually prioritizes the players' voices and listens and then reacts, which, once again, is that's kind of as a different, it's almost like partnership, right? And then like what we're talking here is like, okay, well, we're partnering on social justice issues or civic issues. And it could be, you know, anything, but it is in this instance, you know, the election day. And I think that is really interesting to me that regardless of what the topic is, like what's important to our players, you know, and the NBA is responsive and reflexive to that. And I know clearly it's always like, I wish we could do more, But the fact that they've been that consistent in their response over the years, I think it, it speaks volumes to how rare the NBA is as an organization.
And by the way, I love that you mentioned the WNBA in there, which we should have done. They've been politically more, maybe the most active of the professional leagues.
Last but not least in our conversation, it's sad to always, you know, say goodbye for the week, but we got to end it on an interesting note. One of the most compelling aspects of every single season is, well, what are the people wearing? What's the jersey? What's your favorite jersey? I have been around basketball my whole life. You have been around basketball your whole life. So when you think about your favorite jerseys, we got to throw a little wrench into this question, and that is, what is your favorite retro jersey, Kurt?
There are some really good ones that are coming back this year. By the way, the Suns are bringing back the Sunburst one, the Charles Barkley with the Sun. I actually love that one. I'm glad that that one's coming back. Like, I'm really fond of that. The Nets are bringing back this year the Stars and Stripes look, the red, white, and blue with the stars on the side from eras ago. Like, I love some of them. But it's such a personal preference thing. Like, the Jazz are bringing back the Mountain one. I mean, people love it, and I'm kind of like meh on it. I'm always kind of more of a fan of the classics, the ones that don't. The Spurs don't change a lot, right?
No, it's very consistent.
If you're the Lakers,
the Fiesta jersey, that was pretty radical.
Yeah, that's true. Lakers though, Celtics, the Heat, Bulls really don't change much, and I'm kind of. Oh, actually, Heat do. In fact, by the way, I don't know if they're bringing it back. Some of those Miami Vice ones were awesome. I loved some of the Miami Vice look ones. I have to say this though, because it came out, maybe an hour before you and I sat down to tape, hour and a half. The Houston Rockets throwback this year is, I don't know, it is white with green and yellow lettering. It honestly looks like Notre Dame University. Their white jerseys before a game, or maybe the Sonics, kind of a Sonics, I don't know, 2003 Rashard Lewis look. I'm not sure why they've got, I don't know how this ties into Houston's history, but it's, I'm honestly going to see that at some point flipping through League Pass and stop and go, why is Notre Dame playing Charlotte? Like, I'm confused. Why? It's going to take me a minute to figure out who that is.
Yeah, I peeked at those jerseys and I quickly moved on. I think with my retro jersey, it has to, I mean, I don't know if this is just my generation, because, you know, the Vince Carter slam dunk contest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's seared into my memory. That to me, it must have been like what it was like watching Michael Jordan versus like Dominique Wilkins, you know, like how those dunk contests were so epic. But seeing Vince Carter in that throwback, well, I guess it was modern at that time.
Why not?
The Toronto Raptors jerseys. I mean, the thing that you would have, let me just spell this out for you. One, a guy who dunks the ball better than like most people alive or whoever lived. That's pretty cool.
One of the all-time greats, yeah.
Then two, a dinosaur. Like, do I need, you know what I'm saying? Like, is there anything cooler than that? I think, honestly, if you were in a writer's room and you thought, hey guys, we need to come up with something to really get with the kids, you know, like what is better than T-Rexes or Raptors? Like, bring me a dino and bring me, you know, incredible dunks and let's just put it together. And it's that could work. And it did work for an entire generation. So for me, that is number one. And number two would be it's 1996, the All-Star game. It's in my hometown, San Antonio. They had, I think it's a jalapeno, but it's a chili pepper on the jersey.
It was a red chili, though, right? Like, I don't know.
And it was a turquoise. It was, I think, it was the away. And then the home was white. And, like, the accents of, like, turquoise, all the Fiesta colors, turquoise, like, pink. It is one of the coolest jerseys. Like I said, I'm kind of a sucker for, one, I love salsa. So, like, I'm from San Antonio. So the idea I can see, a chili pepper and a dinosaur on my jersey, to me, that is the most exciting thing.
Yeah. I don't think the dinosaurs were into chili peppers. Maybe they were. Maybe.
But next week, Kurt, we're going to have another great conversation, or I think actually the week after that.
Right,
But if you, anytime you want to know what Kurt and his team is doing, just go to nbcsports.com/PBTExtra, and you'll be able to see all the work that they put out. Kurt, can't wait to talk to you again.
I can't wait to talk to you, Corey. Take care, buddy.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.